Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 1, Episode 15, If Wishes Were Horses. This episode aired May 16th, 1993. Before we dig into this episode, is there anything we need to discuss from the previous podcast?
No, it was perfect.
I did notice in the edit that we kept calling Brian Keith's character Brian Keith instead of his character's name, but I have no regrets.
Well, it's accurate. That's what he's called.
Okay. We open in Quark's, and Quark is trying to get Odo to chill out. He says, the place is deserted. There hasn't been a ship in for 3 days, and yet you sit at the bar like a Benarium hawk. Quark says he needs to relax, maybe visit a holosuite, but Odo says he has no time for fantasies. He says, too many people dream of places they'll never go, wish for things they'll never have, instead of paying adequate attention to their real lives. He is such an O-downer.
He manages to suck the fun out of any situation.
It's true. Quark says he could create a shapeshifter playmate and the two of you could intermingle, of course, in that disgusting way that Quark talks, and he swirls around a glass of blue liquid as if Odo might intermingle in liquid in a bucket.
Quark being true to form.
Well, and Odo, 100% on my side here, scoffs and says, you're disgusting. Quark says, it's a living.
I like how Quark doesn't even attempt to bribe Odo. You'll pay like everyone else.
Right.
I would think, though, he'd want to get Odo out of the bar. I mean, maybe offer him a discount. Because if Odo's in the bar, all those nefarious types that Quark likes to do business with would probably be reticent about spending any time in the bar with the chief of security, sitting there watching them.
Yeah, if he could find a way to get Odo out of the bar, Quark would benefit from it in so many ways. So maybe he should offer it to him at a discount,
yeah.
Like an employee discount. Although I'm pretty sure Ferengis have no concept of employee discounts.
They charge employees more because they're taking away higher paying customers.
Right. I think that's probably true.
But yes, in summary, Odo is grumpy.
I am glad, though, that Quark is aware that he makes a living being disgusting. I mean, I'm not okay that he does that, but I'm glad that he understands it.
He recognizes his failings.
I don't think he thinks it's a failing. I think he thinks it's opportunity.
Yes.
Just then, Jake Sisko walks in with a baseball bat. He looks like he's gotten taller since the last episode. Odo is suddenly concerned that Quark is letting Jake use the holosuite, and Quark says it's not what you think. His father brought a program, and every afternoon, the boy goes up to play with his baseball mitten and some famous players. Hopefully, they clean the place up before they let children in there.
Yeah, I'm thinking power wash and bleach the place.
Yuck. He says the program has some famous baseball players, which he names. Some are made up, but he also mentions Ted Williams, and he says a true entrepreneur knows how to sniff the wind, meaning pay attention to things that might make him money. He tells Odo to try it, and Odo says he has no sense of smell, yet somehow hitting him on the head knocks him out. Anyway, that's a dead horse we beat in a previous episode.
I feel like I could beat that one some more.
Oh my god. Quark says you don't need a sense of smell to sense the scent of opportunity. He says there's a fortune to be made in family entertainment. Little hollow creatures running around, rides, games for the kiddies, Ferengi selling useless souvenirs. He's going to make Disneyland.
Ferengi Disneyland.
Or Ferengiland.
The concept of that sounds pretty horrendous.
That sounds bad. Odo can't believe that he'd replace all of his sexual hollow programs with family entertainment. And Quark says he's not replacing, he's expanding into the space next door. What's next door? What's next door to Quark's? They never really say.
They didn't have enough for the set budget.
Odo scoffs, saying he's still disgusting, and he leaves the bar. And Quark says, till the day I die. Those two are fun.
I think what's good here is these two actors seem to work really well off each other. It's one of those things that's always so important in a show is good chemistry.
Yeah. Do you think Odo enjoys this banter with Quark? Or does he just go in there because he's trying to catch Quark at something?
I would assume that he loves to not like doing it.
Yeah.
This is something I don't enjoy doing, but I really enjoy.
I do also think that part of the reason Odo is such a curmudgeon is that it's hard for him to smile in that makeup. I don't think he can be happy, so he has to scoff and make noises and roll his eyes.
Showing any kind of facial expression would be incredibly hard in that.
Yeah, totally.
Did you notice with the makeup that it seemed to have much more of a skin texture? It wasn't as shiny as we've seen in previous episodes. So, pointing back to something you said earlier, I thought it looked very skin-like in this, as opposed to other times when it's looked sort of shiny, almost like rubberized.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we can tell when they sort of stabilize on how Odo looks, because, it's been changing a fair amount.
Right. Did you notice as well, Morn was in this entire scene?
I did notice. This is a big scene for Morn. He doesn't do anything, but he is in the scene.
He was in the back talking to a Starfleet NPC, and then you see Rom talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
Furthering my view, he is one of the prophets.
Oy. I'm surprised we haven't gotten letters about that yet. Maybe we still will.
Possible.
Oh, do I have to talk about the next scene?
Yes, it's part of the show.
Dax and Bashir. Are you sure I have to? Oh my God, it's so stupid. Okay. Bashir is telling her that she's constantly in his thoughts. He can't even concentrate. Why is this continuing? Why does she humor him? I don't understand. Dax says, it seems like you are concentrating just fine on the junior lieutenant at the reception for Captain Stabius. Julian, caught in a lie, says she was a poor substitute for you. Do I have to keep going? Oh my God. And then Dax says, there was also the Betazoid envoy who was here last week. He's so busted and so disgusting. Go become a Ferengi. You'll fit right in.
Dax is just not having any of this, though. She is just shutting him down.
Yeah, but I never want to see him again. I'd like him to just leave. But she says, oh, we're friends and I enjoy the time we spend together. And I sincerely doubt that's true.
She enjoys being creeped after?
Yeah, she does not enjoy it. Maybe she likes making fun of him. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Nobody wants someone creeping on them all the time, especially when they aren't interested and when they're just trying to do their job. I mean, my biggest challenge is I keep going, this is where she works. It makes me crazy.
At what point does HR need to get involved?
I wish we had HR, but we don't.
I feel Starfleet is lacking on this.
Right. Well, that's because we should have outgrown it. As part of our evolution, it's like, oh, we evolved away from all these other crappy things, but we're still harassing women. That's awesome. Julian says, you're driving a stake through my heart as he looks around the bar for other women to harass. At least that's how I read the scene.
He's so cheesy.
She says, try a high-pitched sonic shower, which I guess is like a cold shower. And he says he already tried it. And then, thankfully, she leaves him.
I have a suggestion here. Perhaps Sisko could get bromide put into Bashir's tea. I think he probably needs it.
I don't know what that is.
It's an old British army legend that they used to put bromide into the soldiers' tea to curb their, quote, impulses.
Oh, God. I was 100% shocked he didn't get up and run after her like he always does. But then in the next scene, she's coming up the elevator into op. So I guess he didn't chase after her because she was going to work. What a relief.
Yeah.
She apologizes for being late and she says she was having dinner with Julian.
Sorry, I'm late. I was just being harassed by Bashir again.
But also, isn't Quark's like 35 seconds from ops? How could she be late? Be on time. What's the matter with you? You're a professional. Anyway, Sisko asks, how is our young doctor? And she responds with, he's young. And also she has kind of a smirk on her face.
She must have so much perspective, having lived all those lives.
But the fact that she never tells Sisko about it or you know, a fake HR or whatever, it just allows it to continue. Imagine if she did speak up and told Sisko, look, he is just endlessly chasing after me and it's tiring. Then he would say one word to him and he would be mortified and it would never happen again. But the trouble is, she's not speaking up. Part of me is like, yes, women don't like to speak up for a lot of reasons, which that's not, we're not going to go into that because that's not what this podcast is about. But the more, I guess, obnoxious part of it is she's not speaking up because they're trying to convince me that she's okay with this and she likes the attention. And I think they do her no favors and they do women everywhere no service with that kind of crappy writing. I really am disturbed by it.
And there's like not really any kind of rebuttal you can make to that.
Except maybe you could just say it's 1993.
Was that really acceptable behavior or was that tolerated behavior?
Yeah, I just, it bothers me. And I know too that I didn't really get into the show when it first aired. And this kind of stuff is probably why, even if I couldn't maybe articulate it at that time, because
yeah.
I, you know, didn't have enough life experience to understand it. That just may have weighed on me that she wasn't just allowed to be a woman and be a scientist. It was just a drag.
So moving on from your favorite character.
So then Dax asks if anything is happening, and Kira says there's an unusual reading, and Dax decides to take a look at the sensors. And there are elevated thoron emissions in the plasma field. Why do I type these science words? I don't know what any of them mean, but, you know, I got it. Sisko says it might be an environmental byproduct created by the influx of ships in the area. Dax says, maybe. Ships have always avoided the Denarius belt until the wormhole appeared. So maybe the warp and impulse engines are affecting the plasma field. Then she wonders if it will cause the station any problems. And Kira kind of smiles and says, we were hoping you could tell us that. Kira seems unusually chipper today, and Dax seems happy to have something to do.
Well, that's what the science officer is supposed to do.
That's right. Then we go to Miles and Keiko's quarters, and yay, Keiko is back.
Yay.
Her 100-year-old mother must be 101 by now. So Miles is reading a story to their daughter about Rumpelstiltskin. She's a cute little thing, that Molly. And he finishes up the story and says good night and sweet dreams. And Molly defiantly says she's not tired. But Keiko kisses her head and says good night as they turn off the light. And Molly wipes the kiss off her head, which I thought was funny. She was not impressed. I'm not sure that was in the script. She just did it.
I think it all worked.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it was cute.
I do like Colm Meaney.
Yeah.
His portrayal of Miles just constantly comes off as a very real person. That's somebody you could relate to, or somebody that you know. Certainly from my background, I've known people like Miles.
Yeah, he's the everyman. It's why he rolls his sleeves up.
Yeah, there's some funny little traits like that, but I like it.
All right, then they leave Molly's room, and Miles says he'll tuck Keiko in with a bedtime story, too. But before they get too far away, Molly comes running out of her room in her adorable little blue footy pajamas, saying, he's in my room. Uh-oh, I don't like the sound of that. She says Rumpelstiltskin is in her room, and Miles says it was just make-believe he isn't real, but he says he'll go in and check, and then he wonders out loud why they tell her stories about evil dwarves that want to steal children. Which is an excellent question.
Yes. Just put it to bed with a horror movie on. That would be a good idea.
Well, some of those grim fairy tales are truly grim.
Oh, yeah.
But then when he opens the door and enters the bedroom, he is quite shocked to find Rumpelstiltskin, pointy ears and all, is actually in the room. And Rumpel says, don't look so distraught. I'm only here to offer you my services if you should need them. Miles does not look pleased at this development, and maybe we are in for a goofy episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, when you see Rumpelstiltskin appear, that sets off the alarms for, is this a goofy one?
We've had a couple of them, so maybe. But we cue the theme song from here. Miles rushes Molly out to Keiko, saying, take her out of here. Molly, on the other hand, looks gleeful, like this is the most fun she's ever had acting. And the creepy little creature with the pointy ears pokes his head out of the bedroom as Keiko is asking what's up. Just go, Miles says. Rumpelstiltskin says, pity you'd send the ladies away. It's like all of the life has left the room. Miles then calls for security. And I don't know if you noticed this, but he actually misses his badge when he taps it. But close enough, apparently.
Oh, that's funny.
Intruder alert, he says. Meanwhile, Rumpel is dumping things onto the floor, touching everything in the room, opening everything and looking inside. And Miles just watches him with utter confusion. Rumpel says he's looking for the straw to be spun into gold, which is part of the story. But Miles asks if he's really Rumpelstiltskin, and the dude says he doesn't like the sound of his own name, and they get into a whole thing that's from the story of Rumpelstiltskin. Then two big security dudes appear.
Yeah.
Starfleet, I notice, not Bajoran. And they point a phaser at the creepy little dude, but he says he'll be very pleasant unless you try and lay a hand on me. Besides, he says, I'm much too fast for you. And then Miles, annoyed, motions for them to grab him, but he disappears as they try to snatch him, and then he reappears kind of behind the security guys. And then he says to Miles, just tell me your needs and I'll tell you my price. Then O'Brien realizes he's in over his head and he calls Sisko, and he says, get to my quarters on the double. Sisko says he's on his way, but on his way out the door, he runs into Jake, who has an imaginary friend of his own in a surprisingly short baseball player from the holosuite. It's like Moriarty came out of the holosuite.
Except this one's a baseball player.
The characters are breaking out of the holoprograms, which seems like a very bad idea considering what goes on in those holosuites. Now we go to Julian, who is asleep, I guess, in his quarters, unless he's sleeping somewhere else.
And he's still wearing his uniform.
Well, maybe he was just having a little cat nap.
Oh, could be. Because I picture Sisko not sleeping in his uniform. A pair of Starfleet boxers. That's what I expect.
Or some blue footy pajamas like Molly.
Oh, that's very cute.
They should issue those to everybody. That would be cute.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jadzia wakes him up by running her hands across his face, and she goes in to kiss him, but he backs away, and she asks him if something is wrong. He says, funny, I was about to ask you the same question. As she kisses him, he says, maybe she has picked up the Laurasian virus that's going around. Somehow he grabs a tricorder, I guess he just keeps one next to the bed, and starts scanning her, and he asks how she feels, and she says, wonderful. He says she has no fever. Then he thinks maybe there's something wrong with him, not her, which is true, there is something wrong with him. He thinks maybe he's having an allergic reaction to the replicated antipasto he must have had for lunch or something.
Yeah.
As this obviously fantasy Jadzia is kissing him and stroking his hair. He decides he must be hallucinating, and then she asks, why are you fighting it? And then he wonders the same thing and decides to give in. But oh, never mind. Kira says, all senior officers officers to ops immediately.
Julian doesn't seem too happy about being stalked by this version of Jadzia.
Funny that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that as we go. So then Julian pops up and says, oh, I get it. O'Brien put you up to this, which, no, Julian, women are not your idiot playthings. That's just not how that's going to go. She says it's no joke as he runs out and she follows after him. Julian and Jadzia arrive in ops in the elevator, and Sisko says, we have a small mystery on our hands, and he introduces the baseball player who is following Jake as Harmon Bokai, a baseball player for the London Kings, who's been dead for 200 years. And oh yeah, also Rumpelstiltskin, who only existed in storybooks before today. I mean, it must be hard to keep a straight face when you're acting on Star Trek sometimes. I mean,
sometimes
it's so goofy.
Yeah, and this is the definition of goofy.
Sisko asks Jadzia if this could be related to the increased Thoron emissions in the plasma field, and Jadzia is like, huh? Thoron emissions? Just as the real Jadzia comes up in the elevator, and the fake Jadzia hides behind Julian. Sisko just sighs like, oh my god, this stupid place. And Bashir looks quite shocked to see the second Jadzia.
Fantasy Island, Jadzia hides behind him. Loved it.
Oh man. After an ad break, Julian is scanning the baseball player as he talks about playing ball with Jake. He said they were going to work on some base running, but they both got hungry. And Kira is like, a hologram with an appetite? You know, she hates nonsense, and I love her for it. And I was thinking here, where's Odo? He really hates nonsense. He should be involved in this conversation.
Right.
Then Julian scans Rumpel and the fake Jadzia as she paws at him. He seems a bit embarrassed, but this is your own fault, Julian. He says they're not holograms, they're quite real, which is a bit of a mystery. The baseball guy is suddenly upset that he might be a hologram, which makes Sisko kind of make a face and kind of scratch his head. It was like really a, sort of a goofy face that I think you would make maybe when you were just reading the script going, Rumpelstiltskin is in the script, and then it ended up in the episode.
Really? I have to read these lines?
But also I think as Sisko, he's thinking, why did I ever agree to come to this stupid place? So he tells the baseball dude that he's a holographic image of the real baseball player that he created for fun. Buck says he has all the memories of his career while fake Jadzia keeps pawing at Julian, much to Julian's annoyance. It's amusing to watch her annoy him after all of the annoying crap that he's been pulling. It's like, turnabout is fair play.
Yeah.
Maybe this will show him how annoying it is to have somebody harassing you at work all the time. And in my notes, I wrote, you obnoxious twit.
Julian, this is what stalking is like.
I don't need to beat that horse anymore. Miles points out that Rumpel didn't come out of a holosuite, and Sisko says no, but he came out of your imagination, like Buck came out of Jake's. And then fake Jadzia says, and I came out of your imagination, Julian, and kisses him. And he is, of course, horrified, as you would be if someone were pawing you in your place of work. Let this be a lesson to you. And then also now in my notes, it says, oh my God, I can't stop typing complaints in all capital letters.
Well, Julian features heavily in this episode and in the worst possible way.
So the real Jadzia appears to find this amusing. She says it could be some kind of subspace disruption or dimensional shift. She didn't see an anomaly when she scanned the plasma field before, but maybe it was too small. Fake Jadzia wants to go to Julian's quarters, but he shoves her off and says he doesn't have time for this, and then poof, she disappears. Then Odo calls Sisko saying, is there something you want to tell me? And Sisko says he's in no mood for games. What do you need? Odo asks if the environmental controls have broken down because it's snowing on the promenade. The scene switches to him and you see it snowing on the promenade, which is pretty funny. That is some not very convincing fake snow. And he says 5 or 6 centimeters of snow have fallen. Sisko says to bring in some extra security, and he says we're going to yellow alert. It seems our imaginations are running wild.
I wonder whose imagination that was causing the snow.
Yeah, I wonder that with a couple of the things that happen in this episode. Who is imagining that? Kira wonders what good a yellow alert is against our own imaginations, which is a great question. And Sisko asks for a better idea, but nobody has one.
I'm wondering at this point, what kind of things would Kira be imagining? I mean, I'm picturing a really cool collection of, like, blasters, phasers, disruptors, that kind of thing.
Just better weapons.
Yeah.
She has a moment later.
I'm seeing her wanting a Han Solo blaster.
Dax sees a suspicious wave pattern in the plasma field, and Miles says the wavefront is converging toward a single point. Then we say some science stuff and look at some completely meaningless graphic displays.
I noticed that O'Brien here seems to act as Dax's backup in a lot of these situations. I mean, does the guy really have to do everything?
Yes. Well, who else would be? It wouldn't be Kira.
True.
I mean, I feel like it makes sense that that's who would back her up.
Oh, okay.
She has no team. She has Miles.
Right.
So it appears to be some kind of subspace disruption. Sisko wants an explanation and tells Miles to send out a class 4 probe. And then Miles slaps Rumple's hands when he starts pressing buttons on the console.
Behave.
Then Odo calls Op saying, well, the snow is gone, but now there's a Gungi Jackdaw, which looks a lot like an emu. And the emu is looking Odo up and down, which is hilarious, and comes face to face with him. It was so funny. Sisko just tells him to try to keep things under control.
Did you know that was an emu?
No, I just thought it looked like one. I didn't look it up. Did you look it up?
I actually went and looked it up because I'm like, I think that's an emu.
Oh, and was it?
Yeah, it was an emu. I'm assuming this is Odo's imagination.
You think the emu came from Odo?
Yes, I think that's him.
Well, Odo tries to shoo it along. He's like, shoo, shoo. And I kept trying to figure out, where was he shooing it? Was he trying to get it into the brig? Where was he taking all the emu that kept appearing?
Just getting it out the way somewhere.
It's probably emu poop all over the promenade.
I can relate to Odo. I mean, giant flightless birds are actually kind of cool.
Is that the whole statement?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now we're in Quark's, and it seems like business as usual with people making a lot of noise over the Dabo table. Odo sees somebody from the second floor toss something down to someone on the first floor, and then he shouts, ladies and gentlemen and all androgynous creatures, please refrain from using your imaginations.
That was ridiculous.
They all ignore him, of course, as Quark comes down the staircase flanked by some half-naked women.
But that's perfect for Odo.
Yes.
Don't use your imagination.
Yeah,
you
why
can
is this
totally
hard?
See him saying that completely genuinely.
Completely, yeah. And then Quark says, just because you don't have an imagination, don't ruin it for the rest of us. Which is also very on brand for Quark.
Very true to form.
So Quark says, let me guess, another Federation experiment has gone awry and you've turned the whole station into one vast holosuite.
I like the way he jumps straight to that. This is the kind of thing you would see happening on a Federation station.
Right. I'm just going to skip right over the women stroking Quark's head, because it's exhausting to be outraged all the time. So I'm just going to move on. Odo says the situation is being investigated and then points out that Quark is ignoring the fact that every customer is winning and taking Quark to the poorhouse. That finally gets his attention. Odo should have kept that to himself and just let that go on. But Quark starts freaking out at all the winning. And then Odo finds that amusing and he says, you're outnumbered, and he heads out.
I feel that Odo had to do that because it would kind of ruin Quark's enjoyment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His fantasies coming true.
That's a good point.
It's kind of like a little dig at Quark.
Yeah, he enjoyed it.
Quark as well is totally ignoring business. Once again, not being the businessman or the Ferengi or being as business savvy because he's so easily distracted. If he's a really good Ferengi and you're having your fantasies come true, wouldn't you have a really big pile of latinum?
That's a good point. He didn't have any fantasies about having big piles of money.
Yeah.
Maybe because they couldn't quite figure out how that would happen. Would he get like a big pile of money and then it would disappear?
I'm thinking a Scrooge McDuck kind of thing.
That would have been funny. So Bashir and Dax are doing some investigating, and Dax is saying she was afraid of this. The proximity of the wormhole to the subspace disruption is amplifying the rupture. Julian says the proton counts are going through the roof. Dax calls Miles and asks if the probe is ready, but he says he needs an hour. Isn't a probe always ready? Why does it need an hour? Wouldn't you just push the button and the probe goes out? I don't know. What else is the probe good for?
You'd think with everything that happens, they'd keep some probes like permanently ready to launch.
Exactly. There's always some crazy crap coming through that wormhole. Julian says he has a wave intensity analysis, and Dax asks the computer to check for comparable intensity patterns. At this point, Julian is a bit sheepish, and he's embarrassed by what happened, and he starts to say something, but Jadzia says there's no need to apologize. I think there is. There really is a need to apologize to women everywhere. Being the multiple life-living creature that she is, she wisely says, in a way, we've invaded your privacy and that we should be apologizing to you. We all have fantasies and dreams and thoughts that should remain private. But I'm not that wise, and I say, don't make excuses for him. He needed to be humiliated to see how obnoxious his behavior is, so this works for me. Julian says he's glad she understands, and she says, of course I do. I was a young man once.
Were you a creepy young man, though?
Julian hopes they can put it behind them, except then she says, she really is submissive, isn't she? Oh, gee, you mean it was bothering you? Uh-huh. Julian really has no comeback to that, as the fake Jadzia enters saying, I'm not submissive, am I? Then she looks at the real Jadzia and says, I'm just not the cold fish you are. I mean, all the tropes and the stereotypes and the makes me so angry.
It's very negative for Bashir here. At this point, the way he's written, he has a problem with an intellectual superior or someone who's even in the same level as him and could call him out on his crap.
And the fact that somebody is not just fawning over him makes her a cold fish. That's just so obnoxious.
Negative tropes all around.
Absolutely. Imagine if this were Kira. She would just shoot him, or maybe shoot the fake Kira. I don't think she would be as magnanimous as Jadzia has been.
Bashir accidentally broke his arm when I stood on it.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't get better either, because then fake Jadzia says to the real Jadzia that if she got down off her high horse, she could start to appreciate Julian.
Ouch.
Finally, she is annoyed. She finally catches up. That actually is a super rude insult to say, oh, you don't like me because you just think you're so much better than me and get off your high horse. It's just like, oh my God. Sometimes these things feel like they're written by a teenager.
Saying that, I have in my notes, wow, this is some clunky writing. Did they just download some fanfiction and make an episode from it?
Yeah, this is bad. Then the computer finds a pattern match from the Hanoli system in the mid-23rd century, and Julian says he doesn't know where that is, and Jadzia says, that's because when the rupture expanded, the entire system was destroyed. And then we go to an ad break.
Nice segue there.
Yeah, that was funny. Finally, we send out the probe. Sisko is recording a log saying that nearly half the people on the station have reported some kind of manifestation of their imaginations. That does not sound good, but we didn't see that. I wish we had seen more of the imaginations going on.
That would take a lot of budget.
Oh, that could be.
But yeah, I would like to see them too.
Or at least hear about them. Yeah. They could have just even told us.
Surely some people have got to be having some very negative ones.
Yeah, like big monsters. And
exactly.
Dax, Sisko, and Bashir are looking at a screen, waiting for the wave pattern to begin fluctuating as the probe enters the Thoron field. Rumpel keeps getting in the way of Miles, and Miles is looking at what looks like just a bunch of green lights that are meant to represent something, and he says the probe is 2 minutes from the coordinates. Rumpel kind of creepily now says, "You know what I find most intriguing about you? You're afraid of me." Miles deflects, but I think he might be onto something here. He calls Rumpel a figment of his imagination. Rumpel points out that even as a figment of his imagination, Miles is still terrified of him.
Interesting. I saw Miles as looking more irritated. I mean, he does seem very uncomfortable with having Rumpel around. I didn't think he was rattled. Maybe he was. What did you think?
I think he was scared of him.
Yeah.
I'd be scared of him.
Huh.
I mean, because those fairy tales, they are scary. And like you said at the beginning, why do we read stories like this to the kid? I mean, it's a good question because the stories are a little creepy.
I mean, it's a fairy tale that if it has come to life, could this be a threat to his daughter, I guess?
Yes.
That must be what's in the back of his mind then.
Right.
Ah.
Miles tells Sisko that they should be getting readings from the probe soon. Then Rumpel says, "She's your firstborn, isn't she?" And that triggers Miles. But by the time he jumps up to confront Rumpel, he disappears. So yeah, I think he's a little threatening.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Dax says the probe's hull temp is rapidly dropping. The probe is approaching the anomaly, but there appear to be no readings from the sensors. Maybe it's folded space, she wonders. Then Sisko says, let's check the optical scanners. Do you think an optical scanner is a camera?
Yes.
Now it's just a bunch of yellow dots all flowing into one big yellow dot. Not exactly a high-tech visual here.
It doesn't look very optical.
No. But she says it's getting larger. Don't you think we should be evacuating again? Nobody's evacuating.
I'm going to mention that later.
Okay. Sisko is on the second floor of the promenade telling the baseball player he's not real. Why not just have him go play with Jake and keep him busy so he stops following you around?
Yeah.
But yeah, the player's just following him saying if he pinches himself, it hurts. He's trying to prove that he's real. But Sisko says hopefully he'll disappear once they figure out what's going on, which is pretty funny.
That was great delivery.
Yeah. Then there's some baseball talk about his stats. He seems a little, I guess I'll say non-athletic. But okay, it's fiction. And maybe a little old to be a baseball player.
Well, we've seen some great baseball players who later in their career weren't exactly in the peak of physical form.
Well, I guess that's it. At what point in his career is this image of Buck from?
Yeah.
That we don't know. We didn't really cover that.
And it could have been from a retired Buck.
Right.
Or after it finished.
Yeah, that's more what he looks like. Well, then the baseball dude laments the end of baseball, saying nobody had time for it anymore, which is so sad and depressing. Sisko says, "You were the best that ever played. I know because I played with them all." And I'm a little suspicious of him being the best that ever played, but okay. Sisko tosses the baseball back to him as he gets in the elevator and head stops.
I'm interested in this because I went and looked up on the timeline about when baseball actually ended in Star Trek lore.
Yeah.
I don't see why it wouldn't have survived or been reinvented or rediscovered, rather, in the future. Because if you remove things like the financial incentives to play and the competition level to get into it because there's so much money involved, then surely people who are trying to better themselves, sports would become a huge activity because it's largely about being the best player you could be or being one of the greats or hitting home runs.
Yeah.
So it would seem that you would have even more sports in this idealized society.
Well, I think everything you say about that makes sense. But in reality, we've never really been able to sustain a sport, at least at a national level, maybe at an international level, unless there was money involved in some way. Even the Olympics.
Yeah.
It's true that they try to take money out of it by saying you had to be an amateur or you weren't going to get paid to be in the Olympics or whatever. But the Olympics are all about money.
Because we're in a society where...
where it matters, yeah. I'm just saying, how would we evolve to the point where the sport remained important while the money part didn't? How, you know, how would that happen? Would the sport have had to die? Although I think, if I feel like the implication is they thought the sport was boring, and especially when there was no money involved and it just died out.
Which to me doesn't make sense for the way Star Trek portrays future. And even to quote Jean-Luc Picard, you know, people strive to better themselves.
Right.
Well, wouldn't part of that be to be the best player you possibly could be?
No, that makes sense. I hear what you're saying.
And if you remove a lot of that financial burden and the financial necessities, shouldn't sports become a huge deal?
It's truly the Olympics at that point. And the competition could truly be worldwide because travel is so simple.
Yeah, exactly. And I would see very few barriers to entry.
Yeah.
It could be the perfect ideal of the only barrier is your skill.
But is there an implication that maybe frivolities are less important or less appreciated and that science became more important in the future?
That's a valid point, but I think it would remove a huge part of what makes people people. When you see so much of the other things that happen, that people still go to the bar and go to Quarks. Why would you go to Quarks? We're not Vulcan, so people still have the interests and the passions, I think, is my point.
Yeah, I get your point. So the holograms now, or whatever they are, have all gotten together and are having a bitch session, which seems bad.
This seems like a scene from Shrek.
Especially with Rumpelstiltskin, who seems like a character who would fit in there. Rumpel says, we should abandon this. We don't know any more now than when we started. Fake Jadzia wonders why her person would create a woman and then reject her. Rumpel wonders why his person would create something that would terrify him. But the baseball dude says he connected with his person. He says the connection was curious. He sensed a feeling from him for a ball player that died long before he was even born. Rumpel asks how long they keep it going, and Buck says, as long as it takes. He says, it ain't over till it's over. A true baseball reference. Although, probably also just a bit of a cliche coming out of baseball.
Yeah.
Like one of very few baseball references that a lot of people know and can relate to.
Ah. So this is an experiment. This is some body, something, some entity conducting a kind of experiment.
Well, that's the first clue we've gotten.
Yeah.
Although nobody knows this is going on. Only the audience knows, but the characters in the show don't know this is happening.
Right.
In a supplemental log, Sisko says the anomaly continues to expand, and as a precaution, we've diverted all incoming ships away from the station. That's a good idea. We're sitting in Sisko's office having a meeting about what to do, and Miles says a Vulcan science mission into the Hanoli Rift tried a pulse wave torpedo, but that actually just made things worse, and 5 minutes later it expanded rapidly and they were all killed. And Kira asks what happened after that, and Dax says, well, it reached critical mass and ultimately imploded on itself and disappeared from normal space. So essentially it just was gone, and everything around it. Sisko wonders if the Vulcans were having the same kind of hallucinations, and Miles says there were no reports of it, but they weren't in range of the anomaly for long. I think he says 12 hours is all that they were there.
Yeah.
Plus, Julian points out that Vulcans aren't really known for their imaginations. No cause was ever determined for that anomaly.
I'm going to call that into question there. I mean, he says Vulcans don't have an imagination, but I remember Spock's father saying Vulcans are a very passionate people. They just keep all that emotion under control. And it's they use their intellect to control their emotion. So surely they would also still be imaginative and still have an imagination, even if they limit what they do with it.
Yeah. But maybe Bashir doesn't know very many Vulcans.
Yeah, that's possible.
Miles says a more advanced pulse wave torpedo may be the answer.
They blew up the other system.
Yeah.
Firing a torpedo into it. And Miles' suggestion is, let's fire a torpedo into it.
Uh-huh. Kira is dubious. She's like, If we make the same mistake, we'll destroy the entire Bajoran system, which I don't understand why you would try to do the exact same thing. This would freak me out, too, if I were in this meeting.
Yeah.
But they're concerned that if they do nothing, it will eventually expand enough to destroy everything anyway.
So why aren't they alerting Bajor now? Why aren't they planning for the evacuation of Bajor if this thing is going to... Yeah. If this thing is going to expand and destroy the Bajoran system anyway, then surely you should be raising the alarm.
We're nearly all killed quite often on this station. I mean, how many times has this happened? Past prologue, QLS, Babel. This is a dangerous place.
Yeah, plus I feel they should at least inform the Bajoran authorities that we're going to fire a torpedo into a rift, which may destroy the entire system in a few minutes.
Yeah, as far as I know, they didn't tell anybody. They just did it.
I feel there's a lack of chain of command here.
I think it's more about they're just terrible at plans.
Ah.
All of their plans are awful.
Like the, we'll hide behind the moon while the terrorist gets the bomb. Yeah.
Right. This is constant bad plans. They decide that Miles will prepare a torpedo, shockingly.
At this point, why isn't Kira standing there going, are you all crazy?
I know. Sisko says we have to be prepared if the anomaly expands more, and he asks to route all auxiliary power to shields, and he tells Kira to evacuate the pylons with Odo's help. And he looks pretty worried, and he should be.
Yeah.
So Kira calls Odo, who's busy chasing emus around the promenade, so she heads to Pylon 1 herself. When she gets off the elevator, she doesn't see anyone, the place is empty. She kind of exhales as if she's stressed out, and then there's an explosion and a fireball that throws her backwards. Not an awesome effect, it looked pretty bad. She calls Ops for help, but before she can finish, a guy who's on fire is running toward her screaming. She ducks to avoid, but then it all disappears. And Sisko calls her back for a report, but she says, disregard, false alarm.
That was actually a nice effect. That was quite well done.
Well, that was probably a practical effect.
Yeah, it looked like it.
Yeah, the first fireball was a little phony.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was not a fun thing to come out of her imagination, and she checks her tricorder looking for other fireballs, I guess, but she doesn't see anything.
Yeah, that says something about Kira, that when it comes to her imagination, it went dark very quickly.
Yeah. A lot of times when you're on the station and you're off to check on something, or in this case, she's supposed to be moving people to safety.
Yeah.
Your imagination is going to go to the worst case scenario because that's what you have to plan for.
That would also kind of fit with Kira. That is where she would go.
Right.
This is going to be bad.
Yes. Then she gets on the intercom and says everyone in lower pylon 1 should report to the outer airlock. Did she really need to come all the way down here just to then use the comm system and tell everyone what to do? I don't understand this show sometimes.
Press the intercom button and go. Everybody get off the level.
But I think in our downtime, we should be working on evacuation drills and procedures because it happens nearly every episode. This is like the fourth time we've needed to evacuate in 15 episodes. The percentages are not in our favor. We need some drills.
Maybe they could put some lights in and like have some speakers. So when they press the button, it could be like, please evacuate the station again.
Yeah, exactly. Odo continues to chase emus around the promenade. And I did write down who is imagining the emus because they never say.
Yeah, I am now even more convinced that they are Odo's imagination.
Could be. Quark chases after Odo to report that his two imaginary girlfriends are missing. Odo does not care. And then the emus disappear and Quark's girlfriends reappear. Quark asks Odo what he's conjured up with his imagination. Nothing at all, I'm guessing.
Emus.
And Odo says he spent all of his time chasing incarnations of the prophets, long-dead lovers, emus, blizzards, and trollops. Quark takes his imaginary women and leaves, thankfully, and Odo scoffs. Have we had a single episode without an Odo scoff? I wish I'd been keeping count of how many times he scoffs.
I bet out on YouTube there's somebody who's put together a compilation of all Odo scoffs.
Oh, probably.
There's a 3-hour video of just Odo scoffing.
Yes, I think there could be. Odo heads into his office lamenting this imagination nonsense. And so you know something is coming when this happens. He asks the computer to run a personnel sweep of all the pylons, and the computer says it will take 3 minutes. Why would it take 3 minutes? I get it when it's scanning information for thousands of years, but we're just checking some hallways. We're looking for life forms. I mean, we often, on the starships, are scanning whole planets in milliseconds. I never understand how long things are going to take on the computers in Star Trek. It's very confusing.
I'm going to blame the Cardassian computer for it.
Sure. So while he's waiting for the scan, Odo sees Quark locked in the brig, and he's very proud of his imaginary arrest of Quark. That is the thing that came from his imagination.
It would make perfect sense that Odo would have Quark locked up without being able to call anyone or get any help. Clearly a fantasy for him. It just made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, that was funny. Back in the Cisco quarters, Jake is in his bright green and blue outfit. He hears a crowd cheer as the baseball dude appears and tosses him a baseball.
He does have some really natty outfits, doesn't he?
Jake's certainly bright.
Yeah.
Jake says, I can't go to the holosuite until my homework is finished or my dad will kill me. And Buck says, kill you? Would he really kill you? And then he says, but why are you still thinking about going? And then an imaginary Cisco appears behind him asking, well? And Jake starts making a bunch of made-up excuses about why he couldn't finish his homework. And then, of course, he goes back to his homework like the awesome kid that he is, and all the imaginary people disappear.
Those were Nog-level excuses. They were so bad.
Yeah.
But again, you're seeing more of Jake's character here.
He's responsible.
Despite everything that's happening.
Yeah.
He stays focused on what he's supposed to do.
Right. Bashir and Dax are looking at a screen. She tells Cisco that the rupture has expanded 27% in the last hour. That seems very bad. Cisco says maybe we could move the station, but there's really no time because we never move fast enough on this show.
Yeah.
The torpedoes are almost ready. Great. The rift is big enough to look at on the view screen now, and it's just a big blue cloud with a black rectangular hole in the middle, and all of the fake people arrive in ops to stare at the cloud.
This is a classic Star Trek moment, though.
Yes.
All the major characters are all gathered together, and they're all like staring up at the view screen at the big anomaly.
Yeah.
Right before the ad break.
After the ad break, Kira comes up the elevator saying the pylons are secured and everyone has been moved to the habitat ring. I'm not sure how that helps, but okay.
They get a better view of the system exploding and dying.
Right. Fake Jadzia asks Bashir to hold her, and he does. The torpedoes are ready. Our shields are at 158% above normal. Cisco hopes it's enough. Fire torpedoes.
I still think this is a bad idea.
It's a terrible idea. We watch the torpedoes and the fake people seem disinterested in this, which tells me that it's not going to work. The hull temps on the torpedoes are dropping as Miles activates the pulse waves. They explode the torpedoes and the Thoron field boundary starts to shrink. The collapse is not controlled. Miles says, damn it, we're picking up an exothermic reaction pattern. So many science words.
As soon as you hear that little bingly bingly beep going off on Miles' console, you're like, yeah, this isn't going to be working. There are a few great triggers in Star Trek that when you hear them or see them, you're like, yeah, this is not going to end well. And that's one of the ultimates, yeah. That just that little alert sound.
Yep. Proton counts triple. And the station starts to shake, and then there's a big explosion, of course.
The station is being bombarded with technobabble.
Yes.
I think Kira sums it up when she says, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah, she's with me. I don't know what's going on half the time. So comms are down. It's dark everywhere. Shield damage to Section 4. We're exposed, Miles says as he jogs off somewhere. Kira gets comms back up really quickly. Cisco says to clear Section 4. Fake Dax is on the floor, her head covered in blood. I guess she hit her head somehow. She says she can't feel her hands.
It was all blowing up. Lots of shaking going on. I was waiting for a few ceiling beams. We didn't seem to get any ceiling beams in this one.
No ceiling beams.
There was also some great consistency here for Quark. I mean, he's under the table, everything's shaking, and he's reaching for a bar of latinum. Did you notice that?
Funny. No, I did not notice that. Julian sends the baseball player to get the emergency medical kit.
Oh no, Fantasy Island Dax is hurt.
Yeah, she apologizes to Julian for bothering him, and as he tends to her injuries, he says, you didn't bother me. But the rupture is now 340 times wider than before. I don't know, why would we so easily try a thing that killed everyone before? But we did.
I knew the torpedo was a bad idea.
We just don't make great plans. Maybe this is why they kicked Miles off the Enterprise.
Ah. I think at this point, Kira should stand up and shout, I told you so.
Yeah, why are we doing this crap? Fake Dax appears to have lost consciousness, or died, not really sure. While I was watching it, I thought maybe she was dead, but she's alive later. Real Dax is frustrated that none of the readings are making any sense. Rumple, who is sitting on Miles' station, is kind of smiling as he watches Miles work. Cisco is looking for suggestions, but nobody has any idea what to do. Rumple says he has a suggestion. You created me with powers beyond that of mortal men, and I'd be more than happy to use them to assist you for a price. Then Keiko and Molly appear and Rumple says, I've always wanted a daughter.
This is not good.
Yeah, it's like everyone dies or you give away your kid.
Yeah. Hmm.
Miles is like, if you can fix it, fix it. And Rumple asks if he'll meet his price. Cisco, watching this ridiculous conversation, stops Miles from responding to whether he'd give up his daughter to save others. Lightbulb moment is approaching. As he asks Dax, when did they first detect the rupture? She says it started when we were trying to figure out what was happening. But originally, there were no anomalies on the first scan. Dax says she thought maybe the anomalies were too small for her to see the first time. And Cisco says, yeah, you imagined that there was something there that you couldn't see. Dax realizes that, yes, that is exactly what had happened.
Yeah.
Once we learned about the rift, we started imagining the entire thing.
Starting to all make sense. It was all just in her mind.
So Sisko says, drop the shields and end the red alert. There is no anomaly. Miles is like, okay. But Sisko says, believe it, Mr. O'Brien. Don't just do it. It's important that you believe it. And suddenly, everything disappears, including the fake people and the blue cloud. This reminds me of when I was a kid and my mom was trying to tell me that aloe vera only worked on you if you truly believed it. And I remembered, I don't remember a lot from my childhood, but I do remember this conversation, which involved an Odo-like scoff that came from my dad.
Classic. Well, this does remind me a lot of an original series episode called Spectre of the Gun that featured the gunfight at the OK Corral, where Spock convinces the crew members that are there that the bullets that the whatever the apparitions are firing aren't real, and that it's all basically in their minds, and saves them, obviously. That's a summary. So this seems to have a lot of parallels to that episode. Clearly, you can see sort of the lineage of Star Trek here.
Right. Kira is annoyed. None of this makes any sense. Why did any of these characters appear in the first place? Dax wonders if it has something to do with those elevated Thoron readings. Sisko says to continue with the analysis, but just with the facts, no imagining things. Yes, Benjamin, Jadzia says as Sisko smiles. Sisko says, let's stay at yellow alert for 26 hours. Then he orders Miles to take his family back home. He heads back to his office and sits on his couch with his eyes closed. And the baseball dude appears and says, this imagination of yours, it's a tough concept to get a handle on. Sisko has realized that maybe he's not a simple figment of his imagination. Yeah. The baseball guy says, we're on an extended mission exploring the galaxy. A while back, we followed one of your ships through the wormhole, and we've been watching you. Sisko wonders why they didn't just talk to us like now, and he says, we've learned that you can never tell how someone will treat the visiting team. So the baseball references continue.
Yes.
He says, learning to understand is what this was all about. Sisko wonders if it was really necessary to put the entire station at risk, and the baseball guy says, well, you did that, not us. We were just watching. This imagination of yours, it's very real to all of you, though it's also not. It seems like a curse. Odo even called it a waste of time. Then he says, I wonder if you appreciate how unique that imagination really is. Not always, Sisko says, folding his arms. Well, gotta go. Sisko asks if he can tell him anything about his species, and Buck says, I'd like to, maybe next year. And he tosses Sisko the baseball before disappearing.
Even more baseball sports references.
Yep. The end. Okay, we have reached the end of the episode. Let's start with overanalysis. What have you got?
Well, there's not a huge amount of overanalysis on this one, but I do have a question about the aliens. Are they extra-dimensional? Are they something like Q?
Like, did they have the power to make this happen, or were people all just really imagining it?
Yes. All the things that they were seeing and everything that happening, were the aliens using the people's imaginations to manifest these things, as Q could easily do?
Yeah, I wondered that too. Were these things real, or was it just sort of a group hallucination?
Right, yeah. Was it just happening in their heads? And the other thing that, for me, points towards interdimensional is how they find imagination so strange. Because the different species and races that are all on the station were all using their imaginations. If they've been on an exploratory mission across the galaxy, they should have experienced hundreds of races, all who had imaginations. So that's why I think when they said they saw the wormhole, was it they saw a wormhole from an interdimensional standpoint as well, and then came through and was like, oh, these people are weird. So... I'm thinking definitely some kind of Q-level powers here. I'm leaning towards that this was actually physically manifested.
It would have been interesting if they had told us, like, the floor was hot around where Kira saw the fire.
Yeah.
Or if the promenade was cold after the snow disappeared.
Right.
So, yeah, it would have been nice if they'd given us some kind of clue whether or not these things were actually happening or being hallucinated.
Yeah, I guess that's part of the mystery of it. You know, leave it so it could go either way. Makes it a little bit more interesting.
It's part of it being a bit of a children's fairy tale sort of story,
that's a good point.
I guess.
Yeah.
Which is how they started it.
Yeah.
So.
Another observation for this episode is Miles didn't actually say no about giving up his daughter. Did you notice that?
I did.
So I'm thinking he probably could have given up the daughter. You know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I was thinking that he was just like, this is too stupid for me to entertain, because he sometimes does not like the nonsense either.
Oh, no. He does seem to be a very no-nonsense character. So you're right there. This was just getting on his nerves at this point. It was more frustrating than anything else.
Yeah, I think a part of him was trying not to even acknowledge Rumpel. But I definitely noticed he never said no.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure Keiko noticed, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're probably having another fight in Quark's then. Yeah. He could have offered up Keiko, I guess.
Could have. Any other overanalysis?
Again, and more of an observation than anything else, is this is the second episode here where we have aliens examining the station and the people kind of indirectly and seeing how they react to situations. Move along home as the other episode.
These aliens are jerks.
They seem to be.
At the same time, what would these guys be doing if this stuff wasn't happening? They'd be so bored.
They'd just be going around the flea market. Miles would be fixing things.
Right. This episode felt very goofy and shallow to me.
Yeah.
It was hard to really see what the point of it was.
Yeah, it didn't have a lot of body to it, I think.
Yeah. The thing that I liked the most was completely lacking in that I didn't see a lot of character development. I certainly hope that Bashir learned from what was happening to him that he shouldn't be treating people the way that he was being treated. But there was no evidence that he learned anything. So that's just a hope.
We just sort of saw a reinforcing of Jake, if anything, of if Jake's committed to something
that kid.
He will work through with it.
Yeah, I think there's not much else to analyze. Honestly.
And I already brought up that I think Vulcans have an imagination. One final thing. Yeah. I think we should all be pretty thankful there weren't any Klingons on the station. Because I have the feeling, given what I know about their mythology and their ability to storytell, things would have got pretty hectic.
There would have definitely been some battles.
Yeah.
That would have been more exciting. Instead, we just got a hole in space that was going to suck everybody into it and then disappear.
There's some Klingons here, and they're imagining the greatest battles of Kalis on the promenade.
Yeah. Oh my god. All right, is that it for your overanalysis?
That's it, I think.
Well, if we go to Women in the Future, this is a terrible episode for Women in the Future because we had to put up yet again with Bashir creeping on Jadzia. And then they made it even worse by bringing his imagination to life, which was a woman who was not necessarily a scientist, but was just deferent to him, just all over him, only interested in him, didn't know anything else, said the same kind of words that he said. I mean, it was embarrassing. So I don't feel great about Women in the Future in this episode.
Do you think that's the fantasy of the writers?
Oh God, I hope not. So gross.
It might be the writer's generation.
Either way, it's gross, it's awful, and it needs to stop. And I think you know what my rating of this episode's going to be.
Really?
So let's move on to rating. So, thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral? What is your rating?
I have to go thumbs down on this. It just wasn't very good.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought about this episode was I felt it was very much like they'd watched Spectre of the Gun, which was a good original series episode. I enjoyed it. And they'd gone, oh, let's do something like that. But we'll make it a little bit goofier, a little bit funnier, you know, less dark. And missed by a mile.
Yeah.
Ended up with an episode that was kind of like, meh, it fills in a season. They had potential, they could have done more with it, but it ended up just kind of being blah.
Yeah, I obviously give it a thumbs down. And certainly the big part of my rating is just from that one ridiculous scene with Jadzia and Bashir and then his whole thing with her.
Yeah,
that was thumbs down. But also, there was just no movement in the show. There was no character development. We didn't move a story forward. It was really shallow and it was really weak and it just...
Yeah.
I don't know. I keep saying that I like goofy episodes of Star Trek, but gosh, maybe I don't. Because so far, the two goofy episodes that we've had, I have not liked.
That's true.
Yeah.
I liked one of the goofy episodes, but this one I didn't think even had any depth to it.
There's just nothing there.
The only depth to it was the aliens, and we had a 2-second scene with the baseball guy, which wasn't really enough of a payoff.
Completely agree. If he had in that scene sort of turned into his normal shape, his normal alien self, even if it was just a light or something.
Right.
And had said something even slightly profound about why they had done what they did and what they were going to do with that information. Anything like that, where they just could have wrapped up the story quick like that and then it disappeared, even that would have added something, but they didn't. Instead, he was just like the baseball guy at the end and he made a couple of baseball references and then he left. Yeah. It was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, it was weak on so many levels.
It was a bust, yeah.
It's disappointing when you have an episode like that.
I agree. I hope we do better next time.
Yes.
We're getting close to the end of the season.
Oh my gosh.
I'd like to see a couple improvements here at the end. Is that it?
I think that is it.
Okay, that is it for season 1, episode 15. Come back next week for episode 16. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode of Deep Space Nine, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me.